The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined by our Friday Forum, Senator Mary Fitzpatrick of Fianna Fáil, Shannon spokesperson on Dublin, Dublin City Task Force, Local Government and Heritage. We've got Pádraig Tobin, Aontú TD and leader of that party for Mead West, and John Lee, executive editor of the Irish Daily Mail and The Mail on Sunday. Good morning and welcome one and all.
Good morning.
A blisteringly hot day, it would appear, out there, and blisteringly hot in here as well, I have to say. Now, let's talk about that story we were discussing just before the break, and that is the case of the Mary Higgins, the bursar, who was jailed for a year. And, you know, listening to some of the coverage during the week, that DOCUS, designed for 85 women, has 200 women in it, a shortage of places for people who should be behind bars. What do you think, Pather?
Yeah, it's a very strange situation because the news cycle is full of cases where there's actually violence, where there's sexual assault, where there's, you know, people who have been caught with, you know, child abuse images, but where we see suspended sentences happening. And here we see a situation where an individual, because of an addiction, commits a crime for sure, and a prosecution is necessary, but makes pretty much full recompense for the crime in terms of, you know, returning the money, and suffer a custodial sentence for a year. And I think that's very...
While being responsible for the care of a 92-year-old mother.
Yeah, no, so it definitely is very strange, but there's no doubt in my mind that we have a very uneven delivery of custodial sentences in this country at the moment. Part of it is, I think, because we don't have a standard amongst judges, you know, which hasn't been created properly yet. And secondly, partly because there isn't enough prison spaces. A PQ that I put in recently found that hundreds of people are sent to prison, spend one day in prison and are let out as a result of the fact that there are so few prison spaces in the system.
You'd imagine that one of the criteria that should be employed is whether or not the person is likely to be a danger to other people. I mean, that's one of the fundamental things. So someone who's been guilty of gougery of some sort or another, you don't want to let them loose until they've served their time, because they may well be repeat offenders.
Yeah, look, obviously violence is the key ingredient in that kind of determination. And, you know, there are dozens of cases on an annual basis where people are violently attacked on the street, often by people, you know, in a random situation that do not receive custodial sentences. So this is an outlier in those terms. And I would ask for, you know, the Judicial Council, which has the responsibility of setting standards in these terms, to make sure that we have, you know, more consistent standards in terms of how people are treated.
Mary?
Yeah, I agree. I do think more consistency and more common sense, really, I suppose. Was it the head of the prison service a couple of months ago was talking about the use of early release, like you've mentioned there, Pádraig, to deal with overcrowding. So it is recognised that there is a problem with overcrowding, a lack of prison spaces. I know I've spoken to the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, about this. I know I've heard him speak about it, and I know it's an issue he's put on government's agenda and has secured funding to increase prison spaces. In this case here, it's a woman in her 60s who has committed a very serious crime, a real breach of trust, with an organisation, though, that she's dedicated the vast majority of her life to, 36 years of her adult life. And as you say, Pat, she's a carer to a 93-year-old mother herself. She's paid back most of the financial debt. I don't know how you ever pay back that breach of trust, you know, that relationship, because huge breach of trust. I don't think society is served by her being put into the DOCUS.
I'm sitting listening to the contributors, and I don't know, I put myself in the place of the judge. I'm of the mind, of course, that our prisons are overcrowded, but I don't know, like, should we all then come up with better extenuating circumstances for some, and let's use whatever words we like, some drug addict is brought in front of a court and he's robbed 500 grand off a school, what treatment would he get? Now, all those extenuating circumstances are terrible, but it's a serious amount of money. It's a school, and even if it is a
partial
school...
Largely paid back, though.
Okay, so...
And she's given her pension, her home to pay it back.
Surely, the question...
She's made very serious...
But I'm not trying to second-guess the judge's right to impose a sentence. I'm just wondering, whether there should be more. When you look at the picture in the round of this woman and her situation, should you be more creative in your sentencing?
Well, again, I say, what if some tough lad from the inner city had come up with this amount of money and he didn't have the heart-rending, extenuating circumstances that she had, and he was feeding a drug addiction? Would he get any? Would anyone blink if he didn't get a custodial sentence? It's hard going. I've always been surprised. On the other hand, that the system here takes such a hard view on large establishments and wealthy establishments being ripped off, whereas they don't take such a strong view on violence. But as I say, that's the judge. That's what the judge is appointed to do. They know the system better than us, I would wager. And
you're
sorry,
scribbling away there. I know you want to say something.
Well, I do think to the point, to John's point here, like sometimes there's a class issue here too. So, you know, I don't know the circumstance of this particular woman, but oftentimes people from a middle class background are better at communicating their circumstance and their issues and the background and the contributing factors. And sometimes people who are maybe from, you know, working class backgrounds, who are maybe guilty of a similar crime, are less able to communicate their, you know, mitigating factors, if you like. And a judge has to be in place to be able to weigh those up far better than we can at this distance. But I do think in a situation where an individual has an addiction, which is the cause of the offence, and has paid back in the majority of the situation, and has also responsibility of a mother in her 90s, I think in that scenario, taken in the context that so many violent crimes go without custodial sentences, I do think there's a problem with this.
And by the way, in court it was testified that, you know, bookies took a huge amount of money from this woman, and they must have known that there was a problem here, you know, and they have a duty of care too. And they claim that they do operate a duty of care when they see someone who clearly has an addiction, that they take action, but obviously not quickly enough here.
Yeah, well, definitely. Like, listen, anybody that takes that level of money off an individual is looking at the profit
but
margin.
That's
than
another whole day's work. I mean, that's clearly bunk in my eyes, that any bookies
are actually minding their customers.
Turns away a bet. I just don't believe it. Same as I don't believe. And I worked in pubs for years when I was in college, and only afterwards did I realise that pubs are running people that really shouldn't be in there in the first place.
They see the fella slouched over the pint all day.
Yeah.
OK, I want to move on to the apology from Children's Health Ireland. And even as the apology was being made, it was looked at askance in the committee and a question of sincerity. And the chair had to intervene again and say, look, if I gave the impression that I wasn't sincere, that is not. It keeps me awake at night. So what a mess, Children's Health Ireland. Mary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Really upsetting, Pat. Terribly upsetting for the families. Terribly upsetting for the children. Terribly upsetting for people working in the health service. You know, it's just, it's so undermining of all of the good work that is taking place. And, you know, every patient, when you deal with a medical professional, as a patient, you're always at a disadvantage because you're dealing with people, you know, who are professionals, they're qualified, you're putting your trust in them. And when as a parent, then you put your trust in a medical professional for your child, you're so vulnerable. You know, the child is vulnerable and you're so vulnerable. So, yeah, really upsetting. Yeah. And talking to people, they're very upset over it.
I'm wondering, Pather, though, is there a bit of the Ishka Aaron about this? Like, the local authorities screw up the water supply and the sewage treatment and so on for years and years and years. Then they create Ishka Aaron or Irish Water, and they get blamed even though that body was not responsible for half the mess that remains. Is it the case that Children's Health Ireland inherit, because they were created deliberately to unite the children's hospital services, that they inherited a whole pile of problems which were not really of that body's making?
So in other words, it was outsourced to create a vehicle to actually kind of hold the responsibilities of the damage. That could be the case, but I am extremely frustrated with what happened over the last number of months in relation to this. So we're talking about, first of all, children who's had their scoliosis operations delayed for years. We're talking about children who didn't need operations actually having operations. 2,200, we're talking about a big number. And we're also talking about, like, big percentages who didn't reach the threshold, 60% in one case and 79% in another hospital. That's scandalous. We're talking about, you know, springs that were unauthorised put into children. We're talking about, you know, the idea of the Crumlin children who didn't have follow-on therapy, so were left as orphans in terms of the level of support they were given. This is a cluster of mess. And the idea that people are taking responsibility, I find it hard to, because I'm talking to parents who are telling me that they haven't even received a letter yet in terms of what's going on, what happened to their children. We're talking about children who won't have their review until maybe sometimes next year in this situation. We're talking about reports that were never published, now, that were never even given to the Haitians.
The other element of all of this is using the National Treatment Purchase Fund to line pockets. And, you know, whether or not the Gardaí are going to do anything about this, I do not know. But reports of a toxic situation between consultants in hospitals, I mean, was nobody in charge?
So it's the leadership here. So everybody can blame to maybe the rogue consultant or the rogue individual. But there's a leadership problem. There's not clear lines of responsibility and there isn't anybody being held to account for it. And if there are is a toxic culture, if there's a conflict of interest and people are sending surgeries to the National Treatment Purchase Fund for profitable reasons, the leadership needs to be held to account. And Pat, when it comes to all of these things, if there's no cost to the leadership, there will be no change and this will rumble on for years.
John?
Well, we were talking previously about a person before a court and feeling concerned for how harshly we were treated. Certainly, to my eyes, the CHI and the people involved have suffered none. And I was one of those surprised to see that Miss Nugent's predecessor, rather than pay in any way penance for what has gone on, Miss Hardiman was in there yesterday in another role. And you see, this is, as a journalist, I've been working on a story with the Department of Justice for the last few months, and I've just been reminded how they will do everything they possibly can not to expose their own faults and not to come forward with solutions or make anyone pay the penalty. And to digress into justice, for instance, Helen McEntee, after what can only be classed as an abysmal performance in the Department of Justice, is moved across to the Department of Education. You know, there's no penalty paid there. But even there was an exchange at the end of the committee yesterday where the big issue with CHI, where they clearly failed to comply with their duties as an oversight body for various medical institutions, are going to build a children's hospital. And a simple plea for a bit of clarity was made by Mary Sherlock, Labour TD, to ask, how many people are you going to employ in this hospital? Simple question. And the CEO, Ms Nugent, refused to tell us how many people are going to be employed. As if it was some secret of Fatima. Eventually the chairman intervened and she says 576 people. So like what? So the number was there. The number is available. A TD representing a constituency.
576. Who are these people?
To be employed in the forthcoming children's hospital. So
sure there's going to be thousands working there.
But this was a particular figure. Miss Nugent, how many posts she was looking to have sanctioned for the new children's hospital.
Is there additional
hospital.
Posts? Are they, John?
A particular figure. She was told it was not finalised, and this is Eilish O'Regan's report in the Independent of an exchange I covered. So it's just a particular figure that was at hand that a TD asked for, and they wouldn't be forthcoming
so
with that.
It looks like extra positions over and above the positions that currently exist.
The point I'm making is these bodies.
Tell them nothing.
Come in front of the Oireachtas. And it's full disclosure
and
everything else.
It was also
exposed at the committee yesterday that the HSE had referred this initial report on the NTPF, which is an egregious failure, to the Gardaí. And the CHI had disagreed with that practice. So they didn't want it to go to the Guards at all.
So I had the head of the Department of Health come in before a committee previously. And I asked the head, had anybody ever lost their job in senior civil servants in terms of the HSC or the Department of Health for anything that went wrong in his 40 years there? And he said no. And I'm not looking for heads on the plates. I'm not, genuinely not. But the idea that an individual could be responsible for the culture, the toxic culture, and for all of this crisis that have damaged the health of individual children, could then be given the job to actually transition from the individual hospitals to the new National Children's Hospital, that's wrong. And unless, and this is the whole problem, like all the conversations we've had over the years, nobody ever loses their job for a single thing. I'm a big fan of the public service, but this government is proving without a shadow of a doubt that, you know, if they continue in this direction, the public service is going to continue grinding to a halt, and this dysfunction is going to keep coming. And, you know, I do believe that, like, the board of the CHI, maybe except for Ms Nugent, who's only come in January, should not be in place in the future in terms of the delivery of these services. You cannot allow for this dysfunction to be overseen by people and allow them to remain in the job, because you can only get further dysfunction as a result of that.
How do you then crack heads together, Mary, to make the transition from the constituent hospitals sometime next year into the National Paediatric Hospital? How do you make that happen?
Well, first and foremost, CHI have a very long road to go to regain the public's confidence. I mean, they have a big job ahead of them. Their performance yesterday, there was an apology, but just as John and
What do you do? I mean, the trick that you see regularly, Irish Water got a bad name, Now they call it Ishgairin. You know, a rose by any other name would smell as foul or as sweet.
Yeah.
Are they going to have children?
Well, there was two areas of failure. It was clinical failure and corporate governance. Like, the governance in both areas were at fault. So, I mean, it isn't a small piece of work. I mean, the first step is, I suppose, calling it out. And I believe that's what the Oireachtas were doing yesterday.
But where was the minister? Where was the minister in all of this, in fairness? Like, how could previous ministers for health allowed for this to happen? You know, is it the case that it's hear no evil, see no evil, and just, you know, allow these independent republics function? Or should a minister for health at the time not have been down on the detail of this? And I will be honest, in my experience, oftentimes ministers behave like, I'm not going to get involved in the Pandora's box. I'm going to get through my 5 years without opening up this mess, because if I get opened up this mess, it creates major difficulties.
I think to try and put the blame on any individual politician is like to miss the point here on this, right? This is a very
serious
issue.
You would say that, wouldn't you?
No. In fairness, no individual Minister for Health is in there.
Look,
and Pat, let me finish. This is an important point. It is an important point.
Year after year after year.
Pat has made an accusation, and I do actually should have the opportunity to at least respond to it, okay? The point that Pater has made is that a Minister for Health should be in charge of the day-to-day operation of the hospital and the hospital staff. That's not a reasonable expectation, Pater, to set. And you know that, and I know that. There is a serious issue, a serious piece of work needs to be done. The current minister has taken action. They have appointed two HSE representatives to the board. There is serious action being taken. But the reality of it is, and you said it, John, when the report was there, the national treatment purchase, the fraud file that's gone to the Gardaí, CHI didn't want to set that.
So Mary's view of a minister is different than mine. I suppose mine is that the minister is driving the bus rather than being a passenger on the bus, unaware of what's happening.
That is not at all. That's a misrepresentation, Pater. That's an entirely...
Second of all,
you're misrepresenting my position.
Just look at what the minister is doing now at the moment. Parents of children who've suffered have still not received a letter. Parents won't know whether or not they're going to have a review of their child's case, maybe until sometimes next year.
Unacceptable. Do you expect a minister to write a letter that relates to the clinical treatment of a patient? Because no minister of health, and certainly the current minister of health, as far as I know, has the professional medical qualifications to write that letter.
So what happened was, we found out there are 2,200 kids who had potentially received a hip dysplasia operation that wasn't necessary because it didn't reach the threshold. It would have been reasonable at that stage for the minister to say, make sure the resources are put into place, that those parents know what's happening, that they've been contacted, that they're being met. Right. The minister set up a phone system where staff were brought in from a call centre that didn't know what they were talking about, had a frequently asked question list that in front of them, and tried to deal with parents.
You might as well put that online.
Yeah, like, unacceptable. Exactly. Absolutely. This is the current minister in charge of this. Pater, that is
John,
to my point.
That is
to my point that the CHI and HSE have a long road to go to regain the parents' confidence and the public's confidence.
Clearly, when I see the predecessor, Eilish Hardiman, the preceding CEO, come into a committee yesterday, and she's retained a senior role in that outfit, it says to me that everyone involved is not taking this seriously. And I can't understand, as Voltaire once said about the British Navy's alacrity for hanging admirals, pour encourager les autres, that this administration has decided that this group of people are somehow responsible for the biggest infrastructural project in the state's history, really, to continue. And there's been no recompense for the public or the worrying parents at all at senior
level. All right, now my prediction is we'll lose as Children's Health Ireland, CHI, it'll be Sláinte Páiste Éireannach, SPE, before we
rebrand.
Name change, that's like all right.
And Bord Pleanála is having its name changed to Commission Pleanála. And in reality, what's needed there is the necessary resources to deliver that service. You know, rather than just a name change, probably €2 million will be spent on a new logo for the operation.
Okay, last thing, really briefly, international. I mean, how do you handle Donald Trump?
Well, I think this
do you call him out as a liar and a fraud, or do you have to be diplomatic?
I think you have to be diplomatic to a certain extent. My biggest fear in all of this, Pat, is this reminds me so much of the Iraq War. This reminds me of a situation where you had a Republican government who listened to a certain type of intelligence, which was false, and about weapons of mass destruction. False intelligence is a weapon of mass destruction. And now we have a situation where there's a split between the National Director of Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, here. And it's been sidelined by Trump. Yeah. And, you know, there's a major danger here that the US could get dragged in to a significant war, which could destabilize the whole region even further and leads to hundreds of thousands of deaths.
Mayor.
Very volatile situation. Diplomacy has to be the route. We have to try and de-escalate. Ireland needs to work with our European partners. And who knows how to manage Trump?
John Lee, final words.
I suspect Trump won't do anything. He's done as usual. I wait 2 weeks. But the real fear of speaking to senior people in the Department of Foreign Affairs is that when you have two countries 1,200 miles away from each other, lobbing missiles at each other, there's going to be an escalation by accident, that something will happen in Jordan, bomb will land in Syria or whatever. And there's grave fears of a full wide-scale eruption in the Middle East by accident.
All right, on that note, John Lee, Executive Editor of Irish Daily Mail, a Mail on Sunday, Patrick O'Bean, the leader of AIMTHU, and Senator Mary Fitzpatrick of Fianna Fáil. Thank you, one and all. Now, don't forget, our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On Newstalk.